conscience of New Hampshire or whatever compared to the great... Well, the dominant newspaper is the Manchester Union Leader, very conservative at the time. Still pretty conservative. Anyways, so we didn't have a lot of resources. And I was doing a story on this con man who had taken advantage of people in the town of Concord. He lied to his wife. He lied to the people at his wife's church who entrusted him to be the treasurer of their church. And when money started going missing from their funds, the grocery store that he had opened with his wife's money suddenly burned down. And then he was missing. And I was trying to track him down and find out the truth of who this guy really was. And one of the things that I needed was to track down one of the... So I made a list of the assertions that he made that were possibly lies. Some are easy to check. Did he get an MBA from Wharton Business School? All Wharton Business School, they've got a list.
Right.
But one of the ones, what he said, he told his wife that his dad owned a chain of grocery stores in Miami. So how do you find out what a guy's dad did for a living, you know, in the 50s? Well, if you can convince a librarian at a research library in Florida to go down into the basement where they have stored the old back city directories. City directories normally list names and occupations of the heads of households in cities. So I called up a librarian who's not necessarily supposed to do things like this, but I told her the story and I'm like, we're trying to figure out the truth about this man. If you could really, you could help if you went and down into the locked, it's not on the shelves anymore because it's old stuff.
Right.
But she went and she did the thing and she came back and sent me a fax. Remember faxes? She sent me a fax of the page that showed that his father was a clerk at a grocery store.
Mm.
He did not own a chain of grocery stores.
Maybe he worked at the chain, different ones.
Which was a delicious detail that I was able to put in this portrait of a con man who had told so many lies throughout his life. But I couldn't have done it, though, unless I could convince a stranger who had never met me, would never meet me, could never pay this person or do anything at all good for them. But if I could tell them that they could be part of the story of, you know, exposing a con man's lies. People are like, what do I do now? You know?
Right.
Oh, it's just interesting.
Well, that's like motivation. Oh, yeah. By the way, we started. So we're on. I figured that was a good warm-up story.
Okay.
We're on.
Where do we go from here?
I know. We'll talk about journalism because you've been a lifelong journalist, right?
Certainly my professional life, yeah.
But not always you're currently a food critic, but not always a food critic.
Right. For the first 20 years of my journalism career, they just wanted just the facts. First time I was asked for opinions for money was 8 years ago when I started writing restaurant reviews. Oh, wait. I have to take that back. I was doing freelance restaurant reviews for the Niagara Weekly section when we had a Niagara Weekly section.
Oh, here at the Buffalo News.
Yeah. Here at the Buffalo News, yes. But before that, nobody ever paid me for my opinions. I remember one of my favorite city editors, Mike Moscardini from the St. Petersburg Times, put it this way. It's not that we think that your opinion could make us look bad. It's not just that. It's that we don't care what you think. I'm like, okay. All right.
Well, you got to respect honesty.
So, you know, journalism has had this idea that it's a higher form of journalism or purer or something if you don't offer your opinion, which is, you know, maybe that's not true. It's certainly been challenged these days by developments. But, yeah. I actually get to offer my opinion. And I also go to pretty good lengths to make clear that I don't think my opinion is better than anyone else's. In other words, more intrinsically valuable. I'm not trying to argue that I come from some sort of like incredible education and erudite palate, you know, where I can tell you that like, see, what I, my opinion about this restaurant is more important than your opinion. That's not my goal, and that's not my function. My function is to try to give people a sense of whether or not they might like to spend their money in that place. I do that by telling them what my opinion of the place is. And if you read a few of my reviews, you put together clues about what I like and things I don't like, things that impress me, things that don't impress me. And, you know, people have pretty good sense by now, I think, of what to expect if Galarno says it's like this and I go in there, I'm going to get a pretty good sense of how it might calibrate to my taste. Because we don't all have the same taste.
Right.
What a boring world it would be.
Well, right. But I mean, I think as newspapers shrink, and we talked about this before, maybe like people could do without movie criticism because you could just go see the movie off based on the trailer. Like maybe we don't need that. And plus, movie criticism has got very, you know, everyone has a blog and it's kind of snarky now. And it's, you know, there's very divided lines. But I feel like food critic is kind of still valuable. Like you can hold restaurants accountable, you know, like good journalism, and it can help.
You know, that's a good point. And I agree with you. Because, especially if we're going to compare it to music criticism or film criticism, the what is at stake is so much smaller in those cases. Today, you don't have to get out of your chair to see a film. You don't have to put your phone down to see a film. You used to have to go sit in a special room, right?
Right.
Where they tried to sell you popcorn to see a film. Well, that's, none of that is true anymore. So film criticism, eh. You watch a film for 10 minutes on your phone, you don't like it, what are you out? But if you drive to someplace, park the car, go in there with somebody you've arranged time with to sit down, and it's a bad experience, there you are in that moment, and what are you going to do? You can't just turn off your phone.
Right.
So I think that the case could be made, and I guess I'm making it, that restaurant criticism can be more valuable because it's can save you from a more expense of time, of effort, of aggravation, if it's successful.
Right.
You know, if you read a restaurant review and you're like, wow, this guy really likes this place, and then you go in there and have a shitty time, well, maybe not in that case. That's right. What I try to do. I try to avoid misleading, misconstruing. A lot of time on my reviews that I'm trying to do is prepare people appropriately for what the kind of things that they may face. Because, you know, this Yemeni restaurant I was in yesterday, this guy has got a vegetable stew that is fucking amazing. Can I say fucking?
Yeah, you can.
It is amazing. And I tell you what, it's not easy to impress somebody with vegetable stew.
That's true.
Tell me about it. But this was really impressive. This was really good. Like if you said right now, let's go get some of this vegetable stew, I'd be like, yeah, let's go. It's in Lackawanna. So, you know, one of the things I've learned as a food critic is when I am really just blown away by something, I have to take the time to deconstruct that and figure out like why exactly. I have to be able to put that into words. I can't say it was fucking amazing and leave it at that. But if I can deconstruct, like, why was I impressed by this? And put it in plain terms that people can relate to, people find that very instructive. And sometimes it will motivate them to go get the thing.
All right. Well, it's a good resource, though, as a good... Well, we talked about this also once. It's like, you know, you're writing a review not to be 100% snark, but you're like, well, okay, I see a fruit fly. How do I incorporate this in the review? Oh, there's just one. Oh, here comes another one, so or a fly.
The place with the best Yemeni stew I've ever had is a kind of grubby little place where if you go to the bathroom, okay, there is hot water and there is soap and the toilet flushes. But you might also notice that the door to the outside at the back of the space, someone tried to apparently weather strip it with like what appears to have been toilet paper and just kind of crammed it in the cracks, and it didn't work and it's falling out. That's a little thing, that's a little scabby little scene where you're like, you know, you don't want to You hate seeing things in restaurants that make you wonder how clean the places you can't see are. Anthony Bourdain famously said, if you go into the bathroom and it's kind of gross, think about it. They let you see those. Good point.
Right.
So if I am trying to tell people about this stew, like, I need to warn them that the place is scruffy, that it's a little scabby. If that kind of thing turns you off, don't do anything, you know.
Plus, you're stating a fact. It's a fact. If you look at the bathroom, I guess most people would agree this is a scrubby looking bathroom, maybe not disgusting.
Yeah, but I have yet to actually. No, wait. I have put bathrooms in a couple times. Sometimes there's some things in the bathroom that are pretty impressive, actually.
You know what? I do. I shouldn't say I'm big on bathrooms, but I spend a lot of time in bars doing open mics for comedy, right? Not just drinking. But no, if you go to Milky's has a great open mic on Wednesday. Have you ever been to Milky's on Elmwood?
I've heard stories.
That bathroom is, that's impressive. I don't know how you describe, actually the Nietzsche's bathroom, you've been in Nietzsche's, I'm sure, to hear a band, right? That's a fucking disgusting bathroom. I talk about that bathroom all the time. It's fucking disgusting.
Whoa. If we're going to talk about disgustingness of bathrooms, we have to start, you know, just like when they started talking about the meter, there is a piece of metal that is 100 centimeters long in the standards. And I think the standard of disgusting Buffalo bathrooms needs to be the pink. Can we agree on this? Can we agree on that?
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, it's disgusting, but compared to the pink, I mean, how?
Oh, so this is the level, maybe, like, I don't know what's a really good bathroom, I don't know, would be on the good end, and then the pink is, like, the most disgusting. Well, the whole pink is disgusting. Let's agree on that. But, I mean, yeah, the bathroom is most disgusting.
I've had people read about the pink, come to Buffalo and say, let's go to the pink.
They have a good steak sandwich.
And I have to say, you've read about it, but you have to ask yourself, do you have an innate distaste for your feet sticking to the floor? It's something we need to, let's get this out of the way now. Because I've had taken people in there and they're like, my feet are sticking to the floor. And I was like, yeah, you asked for the diviest of the dive. Here we are.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good gauge. There's a lot of disgusting bathrooms. Or, like, have you been to Francesca's? It's just it's like a restaurant on Seneca Street.
I don't think so.
Great bathroom. Very clean. They have that classy sink. It's elevated. It's like, oh, this place is
beautiful.
Yeah, but I mean, they're kind of a restaurant / bar. But
have you been in any of the bathrooms at Hotel Henry or 100 Acre Woods? No, sorry, 100 acres. Sorry,
I've been in Hotel Henry, so I know everywhere I go, I have used the bathroom because I drink a lot of iced tea, so I'm always in the bathroom.
I was very impressed by the Hotel Henry bathroom. It's just like the space and the things, and you know, I also was impressed by the fact that they were empty, because nothing is, you know,
just
better than an empty bathroom. You're all to yourself. Nice tile. It's very restful. Of course, you walk out, and then you start, you know, seeing flashes of the Overlook Hotel. That's always nice.
Right.
Walking through the hallways, and I kept expecting to see a little girl on a trike come around the corner.
They do say that. Well, it was this former psych center, right? So that's haunted. Mm-hmm. Maybe. They don't like to discuss. They give a tour of that, and then they don't discuss. They won't take questions or even continue it. But I don't know. Do you kind of believe in that sort of vibe thing? I mean, not even so ghosts, but I mean, you had some crazy people. The guy who they based the Texas Chainsaw Massacre spent a little time there at the Buffalo Psych Ward.
I didn't know that, but my feeling about it is more the visuals, the shot, the hallways.
Yeah,
everything just reminds me of the movie from The Shining, the hotel from The Shining, the Overlook Hotel.
I don't remember the name,
but you know, it's a good when they. It didn't put me off. I didn't lose my appetite because of that or anything.
Right.
Although their decision to seat tables in corridors, working corridors, is unusual because he wants to have people walking by them the whole time that they're eating dinner with their suitcases. But I don't know. You got to do what you got to do, I guess.
I like to be viewed. I like to think I'm in a zoo. I like that. I like people looking at me when I'm eating.
Interesting. Where can you go to really do that?
Where people can view you eating, where you can view others eating their food.
A great table in Buffalo is that one of those front tables at Bacchus.
Oh.
Yeah. because if you're in that front corner, you've got glass on two sides, all of Chippewa's going by in all of its glory.
And they're looking. Obviously, when people walk by, they're going to look through the window.
And you've got the corner, so you can see up the street to the new Delaware North Hotel headquarters, hotel, and everything.
Yeah, which stands out a little bit. It's a little... You know, and that Backus building is famous because I think that's where the Ku Klux Klan had a little headquarters back in the 50s or 40s or something.
Is that what it's famous for?
Well, it's a famous address, I guess, in Chippewa. Like, on that Chippewa, that building is famous because it's been there a long time, and then I think someone got headquarters, and they didn't know it was a Ku Klux Klan, and then someone infiltrated it from the police, and they got the list of all the members, and then they allegedly...
I remember reading about this.
Allegedly, the list is... Someone did... They got the list somehow of all their members that are secret, and somehow they say it's somewhere up, somewhere on a wall, but I don't know. Just if you ever want to check to see if your relatives were a member of the...
Didn't it get published, right?
Yeah, it got published in the paper, because I think we have... The paper would have the power to publish, like, if they got it, right? They could say, hey, here's the members of the secret Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, I mean, that's... A legitimate journalistic story.
But getting back to criticism, but I mean, you're doing, like, here in Buffalo, you should know, besides when someone comes to visit, you should, besides knowing where, like, who has the best pizza and wings, because obviously, you know, if you come to Buffalo, you got to eat chicken wings, right? If you're not a vegetarian. People should know who has the best vegetable soup or a good vegetable soup. Like, that is, you're providing a service.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times, my coverage, what I end up writing about, is driven 100% by people asking me for things. Where can I find X? And I'm like, oh, well, if you're asking about it, I should write an article about it. So I'll write an article and post it for everybody.
Right.
I try to be, you know, news you can use.
Right. Like, who has the best, like, someone comes to town and they're like, oh, I have a craving for grilled cheese. Someone should know. I feel like it's your civic duty. You should know who has one of the best grilled cheese in town. Right. Or whatever dish that someone is craving, almost. Because Buffalo has a lot of, like, different immigrant coming in from different... Or we did.
Do you eat kimchi?
I do.
The kimchi toasted cheese sandwich at Barrel and Brine over by Chandler Street is my favorite in the city, for sure. They're using... Bread Hive. I think it's sourdough. So fresh bread locally, and they make their own kimchi, and then they use a sharp cheddar in there, and it is just a great combination of crunch and funk and tang and a little bit of spice. Do you like... so if you eat kimchi, have you had Barrel and Brine kimchi before?
No.
It's fully potent. It's not some, like, weak gringo kimchi action. It's, like...
Right, which means hot.
Well, there's definitely a spiciness to it, you know, but the real punch tends to be by the fermented tang, you know, that sort of pong.
Right.
It's delicious. I recommend it.
Well, I've been building myself up, you know, I'm Irish... And Irish people tend to boil all their food and have no flavor. So I haven't been able to handle a lot of spicy food, but I've been kind of...
Yeah, work on it, for sure. You know, pretty soon, you know, get a bottle of Frank's and put it on your eggs and everything.
Well, here's the thing. I told you this off air. You know, I have my YouTube show coming where I go to someone's house and I'll eat anything in their fridge that's been in there for more than 2 weeks. Called 2 weeks. So I have a lot of good acid in my... I just can't handle spicy food, but I mean, I can eat old Chinese, old... And you're making a face like you're like, this is a great idea. You want to be part of this somehow. I know. You want to be part of my YouTube, my show.
I think that there's enough diversity on YouTube that a documentary on the best ways to get food poisoning... would probably get quite a few views, especially if you get into the emetic qualities of food poisoning. Because if they can do a whole channels with pimple popping, why not projectile vomiting? I mean, you could do it. All right, you've got the distance.
I feel like you're against it a little bit. Because no, you have a lot of old people.
You do it. I'm just glad I would never do it. So, I mean, if you want to make yourself sick and...
I'm a professional. It's like Jackass, you know? They know what they're doing. They're like, is he really going to get in the ring with the bull? And they don't get, well, they do get a little hurt, but they're still a professional. You know what I mean?
It's, well, look, do you are you willing to make the sacrifice for your audience? Are you willing to, like, do what it takes to, like, get out there and run up a billion views or clicks or whatever the hell?
Of course. I'm that desperate for fame. I will do whatever it takes.
Well?
Projectile vomiting, eating someone's two-week-old fish in their fridge.
If nothing else works, I'm told syrup of ipecac is quite efficacious for these things.
Oh, in case I just need to vomit?
Mm-hmm.
Or in case I want to start vomiting.
Up and out. I've got a little line from Shrek. Better out than in, I always say. Okay.
Actually, I think my grandfather used to say that too. It's true.
Was your grandfather one of these pull my finger guys?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
But you, and you have, as a food critic, though, you get weird calls, right? Because you have old people calling you like, should I eat this in my fridge?
That is a call that I get on a regular basis. And I'll tell them all the same thing. How much is that piece of food, like, worth? Like, if you had to replace it, what's its dollar value at this time? And then I say, would you spend that amount of money to not be on your knees vomiting into a toilet? If the answer is no, then go ahead, give it a shot. If the answer is yes, maybe you want to think twice.
You could just forward all those calls to me. I like, I'll come eat that for you, sir or madam. I need more people. I know a lot of people that don't even like leftovers, like even a couple of days. Like, that's a new, you know, in our throwaway society, they just throw away food. And it's like, I grew up on, you know, my parents are like, clean your plate. Whatever they put on their plate, you're like, you eat all of that. There's starving kids somewhere.
I grew up with those parents too. And all I can say is that there are greater ethical peaks than to cleaning your plate. And that might also, you know, includes not letting food have control over you. Sometimes I'm talking to people about leftovers and I see them get worked into like a state of like mild distress that they might have to throw out some food. And I'm like, okay, you're not supposed to throw out food, but there's a rank of negative effects on your life, including stress and worrying about your refrigerator's not big enough, and like, do I need to buy more plastic to put more leftover food that, let's face it, in the end you're probably going to throw out anyways because you came home from work again and just collapsed and made yourself some macaroni and cheese or whatever it is. Food waste is a real problem. I don't think in most American homes it's a real problem.
Well, it is a mentality, I guess, you grew up in. It's just like, oh, you know, especially with parents, you know, when your dad was, he was just like, don't waste anything because I'm paying for all this. And who knows, you know, I get laid off sometimes. Let's make this last. And then you have that mentality. But things are a little different, you know, now.
The big one is that your dad's not there and you're not living in your dad's house.
Right.
But if your dad's standing there in your head, you can't get away from him, can you?
No, that's true.
Because he's right there.
Yeah, he's in there.
No, I on a person, in my personal life, I've surrounded by a surplus of food at most times. I am ruthless about throwing it away.
Well, that is an American problem, right? We have actually too much food.
It's certainly a problem for me because I'm a guy who will go to three Yemeni restaurants in one day, and you know, you can't order just a spoonful of the thing. You got to order the thing, and then it shows up. But if you eat more than a spoonful or two, you're not going to be able to get to the end of your researching, so you got to do something with it. So that's why I always try to bring friends, or at least acquaintances. I always take the food to go. I don't throw it out, and I find somebody who can use it, and I give it to them. I'm like, here you go. Because, you know, I'm not going to see it thrown out, but I am not taking responsibility for it. I am not going to stock up some.
Right.
Who knows? When they don't have a credit card that lets me buy what I want and get reimbursed for it, I'll probably feel differently about it. But that's how I feel right now. It is what it is, man.
Do you count calories, though?
I have a license to eat. No, I sure don't. No, I am totally a.
Just like, how I'm going to go eat this meal.
I go by my belt. Early. If I have to let a notch out, then I'm bulking up. And if I can pull a notch in, then I'm shrunk back down a little bit again. I haven't bought a new belt.
Oh, that's good.
So, I've remain consistently about the same. I think I probably have gained like 5 or 10 pounds. I'm at like I'm at like 225, 230 now.
Right.
So.
Well, that's.
I definitely could use more exercise and losing weight, but I'm not. I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm not bad because, you know, I'm a chunky white guy. What are you going to do?
Well, if you're not in a Marvel movie playing a superhero, you're just a normal guy. Right? You're doing
fine. Who was that comic? What's the comic's name? We got so ripped for that movie.
The comic?
Yeah.
For which one? I mean, there's a comic that just got ripped. I don't know. I don't think the movie's coming out. I don't know what he's going to play. Noonjali.
Yeah.
The Palestinian guy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Camille Noonjali. Yeah, he got pretty jacked. Yeah, like, it's bad, like, when comics are supposed to show their deterioration, because that's funny. Like, you're falling apart in front of people. You know, Rodney Dangerfield wasn't in shape. Fucking...
Sam Kinison.
Saturday Night Live was born on coke, you know, drugs and debauchery. Now it's all... Now comics are in shape. It's gotten too far. Although, like, food has bled into everything, though. You know, like, there's gourmet hot dogs at stadiums now. Like, everything's... gourmand and like extra calories or like there's nothing healthy in America, right? All our food is trash basically that you buy from the, unless you don't, I mean, you go to the Olive Garden and everything is somehow 1,000 calories. Like, that's not Italian. That's, first of all, it's not authentic Italian. Second of all, true, it's fucking laden with calories and extra shit that who knows what they put in there. It's not good. And then unlimited bread. Like, yeah, that's not good for you. Yeah, it's $20, whatever.
Going for the unlimited bread, you know, you think you might want to ask, see if you've got a little bit of a carb problem.
Well, I mean, how do you feel about chain restaurants in general, though? I like, they're okay. But, I mean, we should be...
There are a few good chains that I like. Bonefish Grill, actually, does a nice job, I think.
I've been there. That's good.
But, you know, my rooting energies go for the little guy. My rooting energies are not going to go for a multinational, publicly traded corporation. Plus publicly traded multinational corporations have multi-million dollar advertising budgets. So right. I feel that my role, since the Buffalo News wants me to write about food in Buffalo and the business of food in Buffalo, is to do whatever I can to shed light, to let customers in the area know about things they might be interested in. And my feeling is the chain restaurants and multinationals don't need the help.
For sure not.
And people know that they're there and they know what they offer and everybody knows what's in a Red Lobster. You don't need to hear from me on that. If I can tell you what's in Viking Lobster, you might even be surprised to learn that restaurant's actually open. You know where Viking Lobster is?
No, I don't.
It's in North Buffalo. And the first time I drove up there to go to dinner, I was like, this place looks closed. It's like one of those, it's just battered building that the exterior looks like it might be closed. But you go inside and it's a BYOB seafood haven. So people wheel in coolers of their own drinks and eat of really, really good lobster and seafood. The seafood's plentiful and fresh. And another place that's not at all on the inside what you would expect from the outside. That's one of the reasons it's good to have somebody like me, because it's my job to get inside and report back.
Right.
What's going on with this? Could be good for one of the things that I could do more of, and I'm trying to have the marketing people publicize, I guess is the right word, is I provide service. Not quite concierge service, but I get calls all the time where someone's like, I have gluten-free friends and we wanted to meet for lunch and we're going to need at least a table for 8 in Orchard Park. You know, and I can sort through what I know and give them guidance. I can't always solve somebody's need, but that's specialized. That's a service. You know?
Right. Well, that falls under the umbrella of that's why we need a strong news or a successful newspaper so that we can further maintain, because as cuts happen and, you know, cuts, what's going to grow? One of, you know, you're definitely like a food critic is going to be on the chopping block eventually because they're like, oh, we don't need that. But you do need Because you do want to keep the small places open that people that need the publicity, right? Like Viking. I never heard of Viking Lobster till just now.
I don't know if we're going to get a chance to make pitches to the new management when they come in and take over. But if I get a chance to make a pitch, I've got a pitch. I got my pitch. With so much going on in the world today, especially in your news feed, that is disturbing, gross, unsettling, and makes you want to give up living. I provide content that gives people something good to look forward to. It's something everyone can relate to. Not everybody's interested in the Bills. I am sorry if that sounds like treachery, but it's true.
No, it is.
Everybody's got to eat.
That's true. And everybody enjoys a good meal. Like, when you sit down with friends and have a good meal, it's like, that's what you should be spending money on, not, I don't know, material things. Like, you know, they put your money into, like...
Sabres tickets.
Hey, there's a big rally for the Sabres. Don't talk about Mr. Pegula, Terrence, like that. Just because he doesn't know how to manage a team. I don't know how the fuck he got $1 billion.
It wasn't playing hockey.
That's probably why.
I heard fracking might have had something to do with
it.
Oh,
yes, yes.
You know, so I'm going to make my pitch, you know, and I am going to tell people that this is a better product with me in it and that...
Well, no, it is. That is why people would buy a newspaper.
Before they cut me, I'm going to ask them, at least do us all the favor and take a market survey and ask how many of your readers get the Buffalo News because of the food coverage. Just ask. Find out. Right? If you're going to decide where to cut, I mean, you can spend, right, what is it, $20,000 on a proper survey of your customers. Find out what's what. I have people all the time, maybe they're just buttering my bread and shining my apple, who come up to me and say, I read everything you write. You're the reason I get the Buffalo News. And I say, wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I'm happy to help anything you need. You know, people love having a place, well, some cooks at least, where you can just call and say, I saw a recipe in the newspaper, I think it was 96, and it had blueberries. And I can say, hang on a second, and poke around the corners and edges and make their day. Make them happy. Say, would you like this emailed or snail mail? How would you like, you know? And
right,
people love that.
Yeah, that's a service. That's what a good newspaper, I mean, it all, like, everything is kind of local. It should be, you know what I mean? Like, and again, you should know some of the better restaurants in your town that isn't Applebee's or Red Lobster, although I do like their biscuits.
I would like to think so. So, and I would like to make sure that at least if you're reading the Buffalo News, you're never short for an idea of the new cool place that we haven't been to yet that we were planning to check out next. I have heard from a number of people who use a system of filing my reviews. The ones that they think they might want to go to, they pull them out, they have a folder, they make notes. Sometimes they send me their notes. That's part of why I'm trying to get the readership, like, literally in the critic's seat next to me. You know the promotion that we're doing.
Well, currently? What's... I don't know. What are we promoting?
So you probably missed it because it was in the Buffalo News.
I don't read the paper, man.
The advertisements about the restaurant critic experience is part of the reader extras that we're offering. Mm. You can enter into a contest to come along with me, you and a friend, actually, ooh, plus one. And Buffalo News pays for everything, and we write the review together. Well, that's overstating it. You tell me what you think, and I will make sure your views are incorporated.
Right.
I'm not going to give someone else final edit, but I will quote them, and here's their name. And I tell people specifically, I would seek to highlight any disagreements that we have, because it's boring if everybody agrees on everything.
Right.
So, and if we, you know, my whole point is that everyone's got something worth contributing. Everyone has valid opinions about, you know, a dish. This satisfied me. This did not satisfy me. It did, and here's why it didn't. And what about this, you know? And I think people love talking about food. These are conversations that take place around dinner tables and breakfast tables, anywhere where people who care about food, who are passionate about food, are having these conversations. And I'm saying, yes, that we can do the restaurant reviewing piece and incorporate more of the people who pay for the pleasure.
Well, I think getting people to participate is also key. Like, that helps. I mean, part of the sports department, a carryover, what we do is we still publish bowling scores that people send in. I mean, you have to bowl a certain level, like 250 and above, but people still love to see their name in the paper. And they could, you know, if they don't see their name after they send it in, they call, like, what happened? We send in our bowling scores. But that's what a good paper should do.
Did I ever tell you what my first job, paying job in journalism after the internships was?
No.
For 2 or 3 months, sports needed an agate clerk.
Which it always does.
My first 2 months, not internship, but actually on the payroll, as an agate clerk, sitting next to Mo, the former bowling columnist, whose end here is probably a subject of a whole nother podcast we could do sometime.
Oh, yes, I've heard. I mean, I wasn't here, obviously, but I heard the stories. I heard the stories.
Have you ever seen the Eel Man file?
No. Where is that?
Have you heard that he was especially loud and colorful?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
So, the people who sat around him would type out prize quotes from overheard from his loud phone conversations and send them to each other on what was then a dedicated text messaging system in the Coyote dedicated text program.
Our old system that we had to use.
The Coyote system. Someone compiled all of these quotes into a master file.
Ooh, I'll have to look that file up.
Which I have a copy of.
Oh, you'll have to send that to me. Mm-hmm. There might be one bouncing around the sports.
The Eel Man. Anyways, backing up. Yeah, so my first job was answering the phone and trying to make out like these long Polish names over a bad payphone with crashing pins in the background and guys who had already had 3 pictures of Jenny.
Yeah, calling in their bowling scores.
And if you didn't get the NSKI skis thing right, boy, you heard about it the next day.
For
so
sure.
It was a great first job in journalism. I mean,
lesson number one,
if you get somebody's name wrong, they will not believe anything else you have to tell.
That's rule number one. Yeah, get the name spelled right for sure. Yeah, you had a bad time because at least right now, at the sports, we take emails. So now we can just cut and paste in this day and age. No more phone calls because that would just clog the phones up with all these leads. Because, you know, Buffalo is still a bowling town. So, like, especially in the winter, that's all it is leagues at your bowling alleys. But, I mean, sometimes, you know, we publish 300 games, which is still an accomplishment. 12, you know.
Listen, my personal high. I don't think I've broken the vaunted 210 plateau.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Do you have who's the bowling alley that has the best pizza? Do you know? You should do a bowling alley section.
Dun, dun, dun.
Theme columns. Andrew, I'll go with you. We'll do a sports feature combo. We'll bowl a game and we'll get drunk.
I like the look and feel of all of that. But does any bowling alley have food that isn't really quite dreadful?
Oh, well, that's what we have to find out. Okay. That's the name of the – is any bowling alley not quite dreadful?
What we don't want to do is put ourselves in a position to, like, show up and just shit all over people.
Oh, well, yeah. I'm not big on that. Yeah.
I don't – that's not my kind of reviewing. There's a style of restaurant reviewing that does include the gleeful skewering and stuff like that, but that's not –
that's douchey, though. That's something you get in fucking Vanity – or not Vanity – like, you know, where it's just – it's just some douche shitting at, like, you know, some hipster, like, oh, this, yeah.
But the combo magic, you know, a story on how a place that can do a plate of wings or a pizza that hits just right when you're spending an evening down at the, with the other kegglers.
Yeah.
They call them kegglers, don't they?
Old term, school term.
Yeah. I think that'd be good. You know, I'm always trying to any way to.
I mean, some bowling alleys don't even serve food, so you got. I mean, that eliminates
so,
a few.
I'll tell you what. Your homework, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to come up with a list of 3 places that have food that we should check out, and we can go do it.
I'll ask around. You know, Milt's our bowling guy now. Milton Northrop.
Right.
And he's still there. So he might have, I'll ask him. He might have one. You know, I'll ask several people, get a compilation. I'm sure when I get that Venn diagram of several names that I hear twice, that will make the list and we'll do it.
I think that's a good idea. I'm trying to.
And some other bowlers. I know lots of bowlers.
Come up with different ways. Sometimes you put an ask out on your social media if you think a lot of the people from that genre are on your feed. You know, I'm always looking for ways to line up different things. These Yemeni restaurants that I've been going to, I just decided I needed to go to all the Yemeni restaurants, so I did. And then, but I'm thinking in a larger picture, I could do a Yemeni guide, but there's only like three or four of them. But if I open it up to the larger subject of good halal food, you know, then I'd have an excuse where I could write a headline that included the word halalapalooza. So that almost by itself makes me want to do it, just to be able to use that word. I'll be honest, sometimes like something funny, like a funny line will come up, and then I write the article just so I can use the line.
Yeah, it's reverse engineering. Sometimes I get that with a joke, like you write a punchline for, or you know, like it's like punchline first, then you go for the setup because it's like, oh, that's just funny to me. Let's reverse it. Or, you know, if you're ever watching, sometimes I was like, I would always like to see the headline, Airtime Maritime Disaster, like if Airtime, like the Blue Angels crashed into a boat or something. Mm-hmm. I thought that headline would work. It probably wouldn't, nobody would want to use it.
Although typically news stories involving a tragedy and loss of death do not get gag headlines for the most part.
See, unless, that's what we have to change.
Unless you're the New York Post. They
and people love the Post.
They don't have a lot of rules.
Okay, well, let's say if no one died, it just some planes got destroyed. Then we can say airtime, maritime disaster.
That works. Do you write a lot of headlines?
No, they don't let me because those are my suggestions. They're like, no, Jason.
Okay. Good call on their part. I mean, what can you say?
Or just I would just go with sabers blow. And we can't do that.
No.
As much as heat as Harrington gets for saying that the Sabres suck. But how else, I mean, how many adjectives can you think of for bad before you run out of shit to say nice, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, there the specific veil of sorrow that is a sports beat reporter, I can't even imagine. I mean, 82 games in a regular season, NHL, National Hockey League season.
Right.
82 pre-game, game stories, post-game, interviews, just the, it's got to be grueling. And somehow you got to tell people what happened today and pick out the themes of where the, you know, the growing stories are in the whole mess. And
it's not easy.
I would probably do a lot of other things other than that if I had a choice.
Right. Well, I mean, here's the thing. Harrington is... And I say this with love. He's a bit of a grump. But yeah, but covering the Sabres will make you grumpy. When your team, we have two more months of the season left and your team's basically out of it. Like not even, maybe we got a whiff of the playoffs, but we're not going to make it. So it's like, how can you feel good about it? Like it's two more months of grinding it out after, and then bad losses, and then spectacular wins when it doesn't really matter. What are you supposed to do with that? I know you have to stay positive, and people are like, well, you're so critical, but it's like, and we put too much emphasis on sports anyway. And I know that because I work in the sports department, in a society.
Whose responsibility is it supposed to be to take a more positive attitude? I mean, it is what it is. If the opinion part of the sports journalism package has people being gloomy and down on prospects, how is that in any way out of line with what they're seeing? I mean, I don't know. It was like the line of criticism that sports columnists should be more supportive of the team, quote unquote. More supportive? I just don't see why people think that's any sort of role at all. First of all, because that's not what journalism is supposed to do.
Exactly.
Secondly, Does anybody really think, like, Bruce Smith would have gotten another sack if, like, somebody had written a better, a nicer newspaper column about him?
No.
I don't think that's what's motivating the major league professional athletes.
Right. Yeah, people forget that. Like, they don't, like, people are so two-sided, though. They want, oh, they want us to be nice in sports that we're supposed to be unbiased for, but then when, then they always complain that the news is, like, a left-wing liberal rag. And it's like, guys, it's not. It's just reporting the news most of the time. There is really no slant. Despite people's politics in the office room, it doesn't matter. It's just your the way you're reading the story.
Right. Well,
that or they could probably accuse you of some sort of bias, like reading your, like a crazy person, you know what I mean?
Sure. And you, anybody can accuse anyone of anything else. But, you know, the slam against people who are just telling the facts as best as they can find them, that they're biased one way or another, I think starts from, you know, people who just don't want to accept that or want to diminish the role of journalists in a community. You know, it's like a sports term, right? Working the ref, right? Right? Isn't it a basketball thing that, like, you get on the ref early and you start yelling at him to hoping by the end of the game you get some of those.
Right.
Gray,
you're not arguing that call. You're really arguing for the next call.
Right.
That's Tom Brady's good at that. Mm, you know, like, oh, it hit me.
I think that's what happens. I think that they're trying to make journalists more sensitive to describing things that might be unpleasant but are true.
Well, you know, it's still the human, I really think it is human nature. The when something doesn't align with your view, or if it scares you or it shakes your world a little too much, it's just denial. Like, that's not possible. Oh, or are you just, you know, this guy's crazy. This guy has a balance when it doesn't line up with what you think and you're scared because of whatever reason. It frightens you. You know, I mean, it's just human nature to deny and lie.
I mean, maybe. I find maybe it's a personality flaw I have. And when somebody accuses me of something, like being unfair to a restaurant or something, which happens.
Right.
I get that. I get accused. My first reflex is always to be like, oh, my God, I suck. No, really, it is. Because I'm not wired to be like, oh. I'm wired to, like, take a hard look at what I've done and see if I could have done it better or if I screwed up or I'm kind of hard on myself.
Well, that's a sign of a good, you should be your harshest critic. I mean, as a comic, every time I go, if I don't, you know what I mean? People can say a good set, but then I can find 10 things wrong with, you know what I mean? Like, well, this went wrong. This person in the front row is dead-eyeing me and wasn't laughing, even if everyone else was laughing. That's what people who are good at what they do focus. I mean, you have to focus a little on the good. Like, oh, here's, I can build on this. Let's go from here. But also don't just be like, I'm the greatest just because of whatever reason.
Well, what that reminds me of is another little quirk I have is every time I write something big, what I'm saying is something that's gone through multiple drafts. Most of the stuff I write, I get 1-2 drafts maybe, and then it's got to go because I don't have time. But like big pieces that are like, you know, go over and over and over, like the end of the decade piece at the end of that they had me do, you know, at the end of 2019, wrapping up a decade in Buffalo restaurants, something you really put yourself into. Every time it's actually in paper and ink and it's too late to do anything about it, I see something wrong. It's right. Like the mole on the Mona Lisa.
But I feel like if I did have like Dennis Rodman used to say, if he ever, I think, set the goal, the record of like 30 rebounds in a game, that would be the time he took off his jersey and walked right the fuck off the court. Like, when that's what drives you. Like, if I really nail something, then I wouldn't want to do it anymore. But I mean, I don't think I would ever get to that level. You know what I mean? Then I'd just be like, why am I doing this? If I kill every night at comedy, I'd be like, ah, why bother?
For the money, because you need money to live.
Okay,
maybe
then. I don't
know what kind of plane of existence you're operating in. Something.
But can you just imagine? I was so envious of George Bush, the fucking last one, to be so stupid, to be so self-unaware, to come out and, like, say, you know, give a speech, mispronounce 6 words, and then have that look like, nailed it, and then just walk off the podium when you just didn't nail anything. It's like, how did you even become president? Like, why are you even here? Or even, I mean, I guess I could mention the last guy too, because he's got it in spades. You know, just like, but I mean, he's got a different sort of narcissism. Like, George Bush is just fucking stupid.
Well, this is fascinating. The problem that I run into, I think, more often is that people don't want to give up any power, you know, and if they see journalists as a threat to their power, as offering facts that could give people reason to doubt what they've been saying, that's when you get the real kill the messenger stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it hasn't come true too many times. There was the Maryland paper that the guy walked into and blew everybody away. But, you know, when the president of the United States gets on the biggest soapbox in the world and says that journalists are the enemy of the people, they're traitors, they're scum, I have this regretful feeling that at some point in some town, some person who is just dangling on the edge anyways figured this is the time to show somebody who's boss or show somebody a lesson and shoot some poor reporter that's making 20 grand a year to cover the city council.
It's not good. Anytime you brand anybody, a whole profession that's definitely not the enemy, not even close, it's trouble. But it shows. But the thing that saddens me is that some people, like, it just doesn't. It should be 100. It's not even subjective, though. 100% across the board, people should say, no, that's not right. But you actually have people that agree with that, though, unfortunately.
Have you seen the T-shirts that say, rope, tree, journalist, ugh, some assembly required?
No.
They sell them at Trump rallies.
Ugh, that's.
And I just think that journalists, American journalism as a group, have just done a tremendously lousy job of talking to their audience about what they do, why they do it, and pointing out the value that they bring to communities. We can totally leave Washington, D.C., federal politics, and Donald Trump out of everything and still talk about how journalists make communities better by bringing out and by being the ones who find out what's going on when somebody needs to find out what's the deal with that.
Right.
Going and getting the answers. Somebody who you hear a siren, you wonder what's going on. Somebody will tell you what's going on. When somebody needs help and they can, you know, and the government isn't necessarily doing what you want governments to do, there is an arena that you can go to. When the bishop and the police won't do anything about the fact that priests are raping children, there's another arena that can draw attention to what's going on and get things unstuck. It shouldn't be that way, but sometimes it is.
Right. I mean, people always don't like it. Well, especially the priests, but it's, you know, the journalism are like your aunt who knows all the family secrets that let, you know, and when, like, a dysfunctional family, when you have a bunch of secrets that nobody knows. Like, when you know your mom's not really your mom, it turns out your mom is your sister, and your mom...
Wait, your sister. Mom's your sister?
Yeah.
When did you find out?
Found out from my aunt.
Wow.
And you don't necessarily like to hear that news, but you have to hear it, because you want the truth. Don't we all deserve the truth? If there's any meaning to human existence, it's the... looking for the truth.
Mm.
And, you know, sorting through the lies or getting close to the truth. Anyway, that's my case for. Have you ever eaten at a Michelin star restaurant?
I have not.
What? How come there isn't any in Buffalo?
Well, a couple things. So the Michelin restaurant organization only works in certain select cities.
Oh.
There are no quote unquote Michelin star restaurants in Toronto.
I find that.
Because
weird.
Michelin doesn't do inspections and rate restaurants in Toronto.
Oh.
They definitely don't do it in Buffalo. There are numerous Michelin right. stars in New York. And I'm trying to think.
I know there's some
unless
Chicago.
Unless Gramercy Tavern has a star, I don't think I've eaten in any of them. I have not done a lot of fine dining in New York City. When I go to New York City, I'm usually spending my own money, which means I'm usually more in the blue collar area of things. So no, I haven't. I've eaten at a couple of restaurants that I suspect might be Michelin capable if Michelin worked there. Right. Sorry, if they covered that area. And those restaurants are in, excuse me, Niagara on the Lake, right across the border in wine country.
Yep.
There's a couple over there that are very, very good. This is where a good critic would just be able to name him right off the top of his head, but I'd have to look it up.
Well, we'll say just go to there. Yeah. Or I can always add it on the post for this episode if I find some. But I just said
Pearl Morissette is the number one over there right now. Oh, P-E-A-R-L. M-O-R-I-S-S-E-T-T-E. Pearl Morissette. Yep. If you're only going to eat one place over there.
Do that. Eat at Pearl Morissette.
Yep. Or one more, Backhouse. Backhouse is the other one. And those are two restaurants that I haven't eaten at because I don't work on that side of the border much, especially since the border got weird.
Yeah.
I used to be able to just run over to Canada and do some stuff, but now if they want to send you to secondary inspection, you can't just like throw it in the middle of a work day.
Right, because you'd be there all day. I do actually have to get to work in sports, probably look at some bowling scores. But before we go, I do have this written down. No, we talked about this once before. Is your well, I know you're currently dating someone, but you had a good dating move.
I did. That's right. Okay.
Well, because you're in the like you're nailing. You could kill it, or I don't know if you were killing it. You know what I mean? But
I
it's like
I was killing it literally.
You were married. You were divorced, right? So right. You were a single man. But yes. Like in the age, you became single in the age of dating apps.
Yes.
But you're a professional.
And I had an incredible advantage over most, two incredible advantages over most of the other people in my early 50s demographic. Number one, I can hold a conversation online with a woman for, I mean, hours or even days without sending her an unsolicited picture of my dick.
Good job.
I was told that this
That's not
immediately
easy.
Catapulted me into an elite status.
Better than me.
But the closer was that I enjoyed, if I thought I got along with somebody and we chatted and we were having fun and I thought we could meet. So obviously a first meeting would be in public or coffee or whatever.
Right. Make sure but you weren't the Buffalo Strangler.
Well, can never be too careful. But my closer was telling them that I would come over to their house and cook them dinner from things that were already in their house, and then I would do the dishes.
Genius.
I'm just saying, it's really unfair. It was unfair for other people to be out there when I was, you know.
I know you were. No offense to your girlfriend, you should still be out there. You should just kill it.
I disagree.
I know. Of course, we're kidding. Yeah, because you know how to cook, so like they don't have to go shopping. You just whip up some. Whatever the did you encounter? How many times did you have to do that? Did you do that though?
I did that 3 or 4 times.
Was it ever a challenge? Like, did someone have like only like some lima beans and some pasta?
No, and typically, even though I always said whatever you got when I walk in the door, typically they just happen to have
They felt bad.
Oh, you just happen to have some chicken breast and a couple of eggs and some celery.
Guffawed.
And it's actually, it's what I like to do now when I go to my girlfriend's place. I visit and, she's had a busy week and working really hard, 60-hour weeks, and, whatever's in the fridge is in the fridge, and I can always find something good in there. One of my specialties is a curried celery omelet.
Ooh.
Which...
It sounds good.
Well, celery is one of the vegetables that doesn't wilt really fast if you ignore it for a couple of weeks. And the other thing I've realized is that you can cook, if you have like a big box of field mix, lettuces, in your refrigerator, and you're thinking, I'm actually not going to eat this, I'm not going to get through it, you can cook it just like spinach. Oh. Brown a little garlic and some oil, throw it in a pan, cook it up, cook it down, and then you can fold in some scrambled eggs or a little cheese or something, and just eat it like that. Oh, yeah. I got moves.
But so do you think as guys like in the dating scene, especially younger guys like in their 20s, they should have at least like one dish that they can cook, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's impressive to a woman. Like you shouldn't be like totally useless in the kitchen.
Well,
like just one go-to.
I think you should have one go-to because you should be able to feed yourself if you're an adult.
Well, right. That too.
And you should be able to demonstrate that for anyone who wants to get to know you better. You also, cooking, you know, the other great part about cooking is that it's taking care of people. It's nurturing. It's nourishing and nurturing. And you can display, assuming you have one, a sense of personal style.
I think everyone does sometimes. Well, maybe
not. If you want to show somebody what you're like, cook them an egg.
Right, because there's a lot of ways to do it.
A lot of ways to do it wrong. And you might make a mess. And you might burn yourself. And, I think you can learn a lot by somebody for letting them cook an egg for you. Do they ask before they put pepper on it? Or do they just go ahead and assume that you're going to eat it any way you make it?
Mm. Oh, so you can actually feel like you find something out about that person,
too. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah. No, I guess. Well, yeah, food, like I said, I mean, really, a lot of our lives, because we need it, but we also eat it for pleasure, you know what I mean? And then some people can't eat certain, like, food is just essential to life. So, I mean, we spend a lot of time eating.
I think everybody should at least come up with one or two or three dishes that they just do really well. It might be just a really good toasted cheese sandwich, but done right, good bread, nice fat application, not and something beyond processed plastic cheese product in the middle.
Right. And presentation.
A pasta, you know? Everybody can boil noodles, blanch a little broccoli or something, make a little garlic butter. Yep. There you go.
No, I agree. I think...
I'm hungry again.
You don't do any cardio. How do you feel about those man against food challenges? I think that guy did give up, right? Like this where you eat like a 52-ounce porterhouse or something fucking crazy?
Yeah, the show ended and he went on a diet. He's much skinnier now. Adam versus food.
Oh, yeah.
That guy?
Yeah. I don't think that's good for
you, though. I don't know. I don't have any love for that. That's not... So that whole concept and that people's interest in it is way closer to Jackass than Julia Child. So it's more about like the spectacle of grossness than anything to do with like the way humans eat.
Right.
So I'm not interested in that stuff.
That's why you're much more interested in backing my show, 2 weeks, AKA title Eat, Pray Some More, and then Love.
Eat, pray, barf. I mean, the only reason I'm backing...
You're going to guest star, don't worry.
The only reason I'm backing your show is because you seem quite bent on it. And if that's the way your vine is twisted, you might as well let it grow.
My stomach acid takes care of so much. It's very powerful.
Great. It sounds like the alien... Did they ever give it a name? Is it just the alien in Alien?
I think they called it Xeno. I mean, they didn't give it like a proper
Xenomorph.
Name. Xenomorph was like, it was the baby, and then it's just the alien. So
this acid can melt right through metal. Oh, this would be great for my YouTube channel. Oh.
Well, Andrew, this was great. We should probably do so. We should do a part two sometime because we could, when this bowling alley food comes out, we should really promote that.
If there's something to do, but
well, let me do some research and we'll see what I can come up with. I'll talk to Bill, and I'll see if like three alleys really keep popping, or like, you know what I mean, a couple names, and then we'll see where we can go from there.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for coming. You want to before I sign off, should we talk about how much we hate people, or list of people we hate at the news?
Oh yeah, because.